Welcome back to the Axedo Playback Podcast, the podcast bringing you the latest industry news, trends, and tech advancements in the OTT and video industry. Today, I'm joined alongside, physically, my colleague, my co-host, Neil Van Zyl. Neil, it's so great to see you finally in person. Two things as always, how are you doing? And what do we have today for this episode?
Hey, Stanley, thank you very much. It's great to be in person with you again. And I've been enjoying playing some ping pong in the office. That's always a fun time. As you said, a pretty exciting topic today. What we wanted to do with episode four here is we wanted to really start thinking about what is something that affects everyone in the video ecosystem. And after a little bit of thinking, we kind of realized OVPs, or online video platforms, are such a vital part. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that. Who better to talk about OVPs than Carl Ruttmann, Brightcove's Director of Sales Engineering. Carl, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Doing great.
Thank you for joining us on episode number four. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here. And it is a shame I can't be there in person. Pre-pandemic, I was in Toronto like twice a month, three times a month, and it was in your offices all the time. We loved, was it Pi downstairs? That was great. A huge fan of Axedo and Toronto. So sorry I can't be there in person.
Yeah, for those of you unaware, Pi is a delicious Thai or Vietnamese restaurant. It is incredible. Carl, before we get into the questions, do you want to just give a little bit of an overview of Brightcove and what you do and some of that?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Carl Ruttmann. I'm a director of sales engineering at Brightcove. I've been with the company for, it'll be 16 years in August, which is completely unheard of in the space. And I apologize to anyone that's had to endure me for that long. But I'm an SE, right? And a sales engineer, my role is to understand everything that our customer does or prospect does, both pre and post Brightcove. So today we're talking about what's right in the middle. The Brightcove is an online video platform. And that's what happens when something comes out of a camera or out of the can and is a video, and it goes somewhere into the magical black box. And then it comes out somehow on the front end. And that's where you guys specialize. And we'll talk more about that as well. But what we do at Brightcove is we are kind of the black box that is no longer black. So we were founded in 2004. We currently power over 2% of all internet traffic, which is a pretty big number.
So that's incredible.
Thank you. And then basically, we've turned our original black box into a very clear box. We've got APIs so that we can do integrations with so many partners, and yourselves being one of them, very, very critical. And essentially, the online videos platform's role is to take a video, whether it's video on demand asset or a live stream, do a bunch of different things with it, make it available so that it can play back on all devices, give it all kinds of security precautions if needed, or you know, any kind of authentications, things like that, and then add in things like potentially advertising or subscription models and things like that, and then serve it up to wherever our users need to watch it. TVs and maybe phones and tablets and computers. That's all normal. Yeah, well, my refrigerator at home actually has 200 channels of IPTV. That's really important because content needs to be prepared and delivered to your refrigerator.
Sorry, is this like an analogy or are you being serious?
I'm 100% serious. I have a Samsung smart hub on my Samsung refrigerator. It is like a 14-inch weird tall display. It has Alexa built in and Google built in. And I think I've just triggered a bunch of devices. I'm sorry. So it has all of that built in, and it's fantastic. And it legitimately Samsung TV Plus is on there. And there's so much content from everybody. And you'd be surprised. I didn't know it was on there when I got it. My kids found it. And B, their engagement with it is like an hour a day, which is bad. Not good.
You know, it's one thing for, you know, telling kids not to be on their phones. It's another thing to say, hey, get off the fridge. That just doesn't sound right.
That's true. But the funny thing is, in today's day and age, with all of the devices that we have accessible to us and all the new devices that are coming out, look at all of the places where video can be and will be. Whether we want it there or not is a whole separate question.
It really is the Internet of Things, though. I have to say, it's something that you wouldn't expect.
But Carl's literally saying his kids are on it for 1 hour a day.
Yep. As long as they're not leaving the fridge door open, right?
Ah, notifications for that too. That's the beauty of it. And three cameras inside the fridge, so I can see what's in my fridge if I'm out. I'll know what to buy. Technology is advancing pretty fast. It's gotten into the bathroom. Ooh, scary things. No cameras there, luckily. But you know, they sell mirrors now with smart devices built in so that you can consume any kind of OS content. And what I mean by OS is like whether it's going to be an Android operating system or a Roku style. But my wife's an interior designer. She's recommending these things and people are buying them. They're buying bathroom mirrors with anti-fog, which, yeah, all right, that's been around for a little while. LED strips built in for lighting. Okay, nothing new. And an operating system based on Android. Wait, what? So people can actually get their fill of entertainment or morning news right as they're brushing their teeth or doing whatever, you know, and it's interesting. Again, preparing the content and making it available for delivery on any device is no joke because things get really weird when you look at all the different devices where you could deliver video to.
Is there an analogy or metaphor that you can provide us, Carl, with what an OVP is or what it does?
There is. And in fact, again, being the sales engineer, I can't just keep it to within our little spectrum. My metaphor actually spans from here to here. I'm holding my hands up to the side of the screen. I don't know how big the screen is while you're watching. So exactly. There you go. So the metaphor starts with this. There are some infrastructure, right, in the world. So specifically, I'm referring to content delivery networks, not OVPs yet. And a content delivery network, without any offense to any of our partners, are the sewers of the internet. They need to be there. They need to be everywhere, right? I mean, if you're talking about UDP, this is an inside joke. That literally is the sewers of the internet. But TCP or internet traffic, you know, it's the massive kind of pipes of water that get bussed around the entire world. So then one step closer to that is the plumbing in your house. And that would be like the online video platform. We take that content, we mold it, we fashion it, we turn it left and right and up and down and all that stuff. And then we get it to pretty much the end. And without any offense, you guys are the faucets of the internet or the showers or whatever fixture you prefer, right? That video comes out of your front end. And that front end, wow, this has gotten really bad. I'm sorry. that is really, you guys are the front end. You are the interface for that water, which has come through the original, you know, not sewers, but the water pipes that are coming in from those ISPs, the CDNs, you know, all that stuff. And then us being the online video platform. So we really are kind of the plumbing in your house. We're not a name that you would recognize. I don't know of any online video platform that really wants to be a brand name. We just want to power as many customers as possible and distribute as much video as possible.
From the Exceto perspective, we like to usually use a prettier example for our front end explanations. You know, where faucets is definitely, it gets the job done, but maybe painting statues, something with a little bit more oomph.
There's some nice shower heads out there. Very expensive.
Don't stay with the static content. You got to have something with motion.
I really appreciate the example there. I kind of want to get a little bit more into that because you talked about how all of this is delivering it to the final end user. Not all systems are the same, right? You said not everyone needs to know, or not every OVP wants to be known, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a quality difference or there isn't a changes or aspects that they provide differently for each other. So when the end user or the content provider is looking for an OVP, what are the things they should be looking for and what should they be looking to avoid?
Honestly, whenever a user, and in this case, we're talking about the content owner or creator, is looking for an online video platform, they need to look at a bunch of different things. Most often, they just look at price, honestly. And that's a real big problem because price is not indicative of quality or distribution capability, all of that. It's not a very good indicator. That's not to say that we're the most expensive. Luckily, there are many more expensive ones, and I don't have to play in that game. But the truth is that scale and functionality are the two most critical things. And I'll explain what I mean by this. Some online video platforms are really great in the US or in one specific geographic region. And others have a little bit more worldwide scale. And worldwide scale is important based on your content. I'll give you an interesting example. If you guys are looking for milk, right? This is the old ancient example of like, well, you can go to the store to get milk or you can go to your fridge. It's always closer. But that's really, really important to understand how much milk you could possibly get. Because the store can hold an infinite amount of milk, I would say, versus your fridge has a much smaller quality. So understanding how far that store is or how far the trip is to the store versus your fridge, all of those are factors that, believe it or not, you need to think about. Because sometimes having a really small entity power something that really needs a lot of infrastructure, it may be cost effective to do the small entity, but it's not going to scale. And some of examples you can see, there have been, I'll use a rather neutral yet somewhat brutal example. There's boxing matches that happen worldwide. And there's an infamous boxing match that happened. And, you know, around the world, there was consumption. And many different front ends and back ends and OVPs powered the same one boxing match. And somehow, here in the US, it failed. And somehow, in Australia, it was perfect. And the fact of the matter is that there was a bottleneck. Sorry, I don't mean to go back to plumbing, but there was a bottleneck in the infrastructure that was based here in the US and it couldn't handle the scale. So that's why I say scale is critical, because a lot of the users in the US had to get refunds. And that's no money. And if you don't have revenue, then you can't pay your bills and you can't function as a business. So believe it or not, an online video platform, even though it's something you have to look for and pay for, is critical to running your business. And if you pick the wrong one, it can financially hurt you.
At what point should somebody who's making YouTube content, for instance, transition to using an OVP?
Sure. I don't know that there is a natural transition point, but here's what happens. Let's look at the creator economy, for example. You have a base creator that is doing YouTube videos and they become popular. Right. And I love to use Mr. Beast as an example, because I think his content is right at the cusp. It's a name that everybody knows. I said it. I think I saw a smile or two. There's a point at which, you know, YouTube is no longer kind of generating the same amount of revenue that you could generate if you had gone direct to consumer. Right. There's tons of examples in the wild. I won't name names, but there's an amazing YouTube video out actually explaining the process end to end just now. It was released last week. It really talks about how there is a tipping point that you will find that you can no longer generate the revenue that you want to generate or have the same content that you want to be, you know, create, make it available on the platform. So typically, customers with, let's say, hundreds of videos or more will look to move to an online video platform instead of hosting their content on YouTube. And there are organizations that say, well, you know what? We got a bunch of engineers and these engineers are awesome and all the time they are. But right now we're going to have our engineers do this whole DIY thing. We're going to put it all together and we're going to put it in an S3 bucket and put CloudFront in front of it. Apologies, that was a little technical. But it's basically like they've got a Lego set and they're going to try to figure it out themselves, which is awesome. But at some point, one of those engineers is going to leave. Sorry, you got a better job somewhere else. And now you've got a guy that controls a Lego block that you don't know how it works. So that tends to be a problem, that kind of DIY approach. So by going to an online video platform, you have something that is relatively open and universal, and you can have developers work on it. You can have as much engagement with it and get as technical as you want or as little as you want. Content creators typically aren't technical. They don't know APIs. You could do it all with APIs, or you could do none of it with APIs. And the end result is still the same thing, which is a preparation of all that video content and delivery to the front end. And again, that's where we hand it off to you typically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I appreciate that, because there's a lot of, I guess, I almost want to say little players right now creating videos, right? Myself included. We always just think about YouTube, right? And monetizing and those things just going hand in hand. But this direct to consumer thing, again, as one individual, I never think about that stuff. Unless I'm talking to somebody like you, Carl.
Sure.
Yeah, that's, and I mean, obviously there's tons of other aspects to it, right? No more rev share on the ad monetization. There's a lot of benefits to going D2C, but instead of going that route, let's pivot back to a little bit more on the OVPs. Can you give just a little bit more detail on how an OVP is built? You can usually use other third-party services for it. You know, there's names like Amazon Media Services and Zencoder. Let's break that down a little bit. Do you want to go into detail there?
Sure. Yeah. So the typical chain, right, we'll start with like ingestion. Some of the more advanced companies will have automation. So they will have an API integration. I'm going to keep using this term. Is everybody familiar with APIs? Can we assume that? Is that okay? It's a bunch of computers to computers talking to each other. So you program a computer to talk to Brightcove, right? And the computer says, Brightcove, here's a video, the metadata. That means the name, the description, all the tags. And You take it from here. So that's how the kind of ingestion typically works. But we also have a great user interface, you know, almost 18 years of development for the user interface. It's awesome. The amount of innovation in drag and drop technology has not changed at all, but it's there. So then that's the ingestion process. We do use Zencoder as a Brightcove service. The alternative, if you were to be building your own kind of OVP style DIY Lego blocks that we talked about earlier, would be something like an Amazon Elastic or a transcoding service. There's many, many, many. And in fact, some content delivery networks provide transcoding as built in their workflow. That's all wonderful. And to be honest, for some basic things, that may function. There's always a cost of it. And the cost of transcoding is a commodity. It's a cost that's being driven down. And back in the day, it used to make a difference. And you would literally buy a server and host it in your office. And that server's job was to compute. It was to transcode video from one format to another. And once it was done, it would put it somewhere. Well, a lot of that moved to the cloud when cost models changed. And now sometimes you need a lot of transcoding power all at the same time. And sometimes you just need it to kind of drip in, but you don't want to have to buy all that hardware. That's a massive capital investment. So having that operating expense of just, you know, hey, I need a little bit of transcoding here, there, go do it. That's why things have moved to the cloud. So again, ingestion is when you get a video and you transcode it, right? That's when you transform that video from one format to another. It may be worth noting, and we'll pause here, this transcoding piece is kind of critical to getting your video to be viewed everywhere, including the kitchen fridge, right? The format of the videos coming in typically is very high quality. Infrastructures or pipes or systems are not the same. So it needs to have some variance. And Brightcove's role or Zencoder's role in whatever way you choose to build your Lego set is to make sure that the video that was uploaded is available now in multiple formats, in different qualities, in different sizes, so that any device that wants to can have a smooth viewing playback experience.
Okay, and when it comes to transcoding, how many different versions of videos do companies require to make sure it works on all the different screens that they support?
Yeah, so the number of screens can be infinite. You know, I happen to have on my desk some ancient devices, you know, some phones that I could be doing some QA testing on, right? And then I have some tablets. Does anybody notice a Kindle Fire first gen?
Wow!
Like who has these? I've got a playbook. This is a BlackBerry playbook. Yeah.
Okay, Carl, drag in the fridge next.
I won't. It's connected to the cold air filter, the cold water. Anyway, so the important thing about this is there are potentially an infinite amount of screens. So you have to do your best. There are some organizations that will do transcoding up to 27 different variants or more for one video. 27 different versions of a video, same video, 27 different versions to make sure that they can serve whatever devices they want. Now, technology has evolved significantly. They may be doing less now, right? But in our case, on the Brightcove side, we recommend like 5 or 6 different versions, depending on what you're doing. You want to match the best possible quality. And what I mean by that is the way that your phone works, right, is not the same as your TV. Physically, the screen sizes are different. But the point is that the same quality video shouldn't be delivered both. You're wasting bandwidth delivering a 1080p version to your phone where a user can't tell the difference. 720 is good. Perfectly fine for the phone. But on your 65-inch TV at home, you need that 1080p or 4K quality to make sure it looks good. And the problem people misunderstand is that you don't always get the highest quality possible, but your best effort is going to make a difference. Because the one thing that people have always done, actually two things that people have always done. One, if they started playing a video and it was all choppy and blocky and you can't see it, there was no point in watching it. So they stopped. So your engagement just flops to the floor. That's not good, right? You want to have good quality experience. On the flip side, you can't push things that are too high. How many years ago did we turn on YouTube, push the 1080p or the 4K button, and then let it buffer and go grab a cup of coffee while it did that, right? There were people that did this because they wanted the best possible experience. But in today's day, buffering is not acceptable. You can't have a video begin to play back and then start stuttering. that's not acceptable. People leave too. So finding that middle ground, giving enough variance of your video to be able to deliver almost any screen a smooth playback experience at a pretty great quality or the best you can, that's really the key to all of this. And there's advancements in technology that are helping everyone do this. One major Brightcove advantage, right here, Brightcove has won 2 technical Emmys for our context-aware encoding service. Everybody claims to have, like, you know, a service that can intelligently code content, blah, blah, blah. But our R&D team have developed a patented technology that really does this amazingly well, where to the point of the technical Emmys. It really does do a fantastic job reducing storage, which is an expense, and bandwidth. And that's a really big one. Not only does it save you money on the delivery of your video, which, by the way, if anybody here is surprised that delivering video costs money, we should talk. But the truth is, yeah, you never know because YouTube's free. But the truth is that delivering video, that bandwidth should be your biggest cost if you're a successful company. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But saving money on that is even more critical. If it's your biggest bill, that's the one that you want to recognize savings on the most.
I read a nice post from Dan Rayburn on LinkedIn, and he was talking about how there's been a big, I guess, pullback from serving content in 4K back to 1080p because of the cost efficiencies. Have you guys at Brightcove noticed that there's a little bit more of a focus on, I guess, reducing playback quality? Or not reducing, but I guess trying to save a little bit there?
Yeah. And the thing is our customers, luckily, most of them have been intelligent enough to do the math first. So most of our customers have not jumped in with both feet and go, oh, Brightcove introduced 4K like 5 years ago. Let's go jump in there and deliver everything at 4K and then be surprised by a bill. Most of our customers sit down and talk to a sales engineer like myself. We have many, right? And they do the math. They go, what would this do to our business? And funny enough, it has actually created new product SKUs. So you can subscribe to a service that has content that you want to watch, but you could subscribe to it at like $8 a month and then get the high definition quality, or you can subscribe to it at $12 a month and get the 4K or the ultra high def quality. And that's where things are now different. People are considering these offerings. And the video files, right? Those are the people that look at pixels and go, oh, that's wrong. This is upscale. This is downscale. You know, all that stuff. Those guys can sit at home, pay $12 a month and get the best quality of the content without sacrificing the platform for every user who could care less. So it really is interesting.
Yeah, that's that was a lot of fun. I appreciate that. We'll call it a pseudo tangent, but
that's all I know. Tangents.
Okay, so we talked about the importance of CDN coverage, but what are some of the other things that somebody shopping for a CDN should consider?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So CDNs, or content delivery networks, do exactly as their name implies. Their job is to deliver content. There are many CDNs. Of course, we all have our favorites, and I'll disclose mine in a second. But basically, a content delivery network's job is to be kind of the store. If we talk about going to get milk from the fridge, or, you know, their job is to have everything that everybody wants to watch and then deliver it to the end user. But the difference is, how far away is it from your house? So when somebody is looking at a content delivery network, they need to understand where their audience is. Is it geolocated to the US, in which case there's a specific number of CDNs that are fantastic for that? Or is it a worldwide audience, in which case some CDNs don't serve some geographies? The most important thing about content delivery network is to understand how much infrastructure they have worldwide. I'll use 2 examples. Please don't, nobody yell at me for this, but Amazon and Akamai. Right? Amazon, which does everything, right? Literally everything. Yeah. But they happen to have a CDN called CloudFront, right? Not to be confused with Cloudflare, who's a different CDN. You figure that out. So CloudFront has a bunch of points of presence. Let's say, I don't know, 50, 60, 100, 200, 1,000, right? Tops within the US. Well, Akamai has 200,000 points of presence around the world. So what you may find is that when you're evaluating a content delivery network, if you're looking for US, CloudFront might be good enough. But if you need worldwide delivery, there's not enough stores in the world to serve the worldwide population. That's why Akamai might be a better CDN for you. And again, there's tons of others. Brightcove is not a CDN. We partner with Akamai, Fastly, Amazon, and many others. We can reuse other people's CDNs. We're very, very flexible in that space. We don't have a particular kind of, you know, box to stand on, but that is a technology that is critical to video delivery besides online video platforms and front ends.
Is there types of like qualities of CDNs, or are we talking just like, you know, how many servers do you have around the world? And, you know, that's the one I would go with.
Yeah. So typically you look at three things. You look at the price of a CDN. Everything comes down to money, always. You look at how many points of presence they have around the world. And then the third thing is you look at their algorithms. Here's where it gets complicated. So what Akamai figured out really well is not only did they need to figure out how to have as many servers in as many locations around the world as possible, but they also understood that the internet is a pretty big place, apparently, and there's a lot of content. So if you're a content delivery network, do you put everything everywhere? Because that sounds like a lot of hard drives. I don't think I've got that many. I got plenty around here, but not that many. So the question on this is the algorithms for caching content, making sure that news breaks, right? I use this analogy quite a bit. There was a news event out of Japan. I think it's the Prime Minister of Japan. No, it was the Emperor of Japan abdicated the throne. And this was not something that anybody kind of had a heads up on. So news broke and outlets started to pick it up and cover it. And CDN traffic started to spike. Traffic in our system started to spike. And understanding and having a CDN that can spike with that traffic and support it and distribute it, right? First, obviously in Japan, because that's where news is breaking. But then as the world wakes up, you need to cache this content with the sun. You know, all over the world, you need to make sure that this content is there and available for people to consume. And having a CDN that is capable of foresight that way is really critical. Because the other potential version of this is that you would not have content play. You would just have a buffer and people would wait and they would leave and they would go elsewhere and they would consume content elsewhere. And this is back to the same question of, if I've got a bad quality of experience, you know, watching on my device, I'm not going to watch. So it's really, really important.
Earlier, you mentioned that not only does Brightco support 4K, but it's won a few tech Emmys. What are some of Brightco's features that you believe are under-leveraged that could be extremely helpful to your customers?
The biggest feature I feel that is under-leveraged right now is we are the only OVP, or online video platform, that supports multi-codec profiles. Bit technical, and I apologize. But there's a lot of new devices that support better quality video at lower bit rates. That's all about saving people money and getting the highest quality video to their device using the least amount of pipe. So we have the ability to create the different versions of your video, not only in different sizes and qualities and all of that stuff, but also in different codecs. So some of your devices, like maybe these fruit-based phones, they have the ability to play back something called H.265 or HEVC, right? The Androids do as well. But other devices don't. You're going to have viewers span the spectrum. The more front ends that you have, the more apps you have, the more devices that you're present on, the more kind of compatibility you need. So we're actually currently the only online video platform that supports creating a single video with variants in all flavors, being able to deliver to all devices. And ultimately, that's going to also save you money and increase your viewers' viewing experience. Right? They're going to get better quality video to their device. And then just so that you're aware, and I don't know, HEVC, or the high efficiency video codec, or maybe that's wrong, but that's what I call it, versus the old H.264, there is a gain. There's an improvement in quality, reduction in bandwidth. It can make a difference to your viewer, because if they're using the old format, they may only be able to watch 560 or 720, right? Versus using the new format, they may be able to get 720 or 1080 pretty easily. Just again, because of the size of the pipes and the quality of the video. A bit weird, but that's how it works.
When we talk about content producers looking for an OVP provider, Carl, what are some of the analytics that they look for? Like, for me, it would be obvious that they want to know viewership. Do you have data like how many devices are, you know, you're watching videos on? And I'm sure we're just scratching the surface here, but what are some of the things, the analytics that you and Brightcove would be looking for, or that you have readily available?
Before we get to analytics, we should take a step back for a second because there are things that we need to talk about. Everything that we have talked about so far are not typically things that content creators think about, and they shouldn't have to. That's the whole point of an online video platform, is to have all of that stored for you, to have all of that done for you. So when you talk about analytics, that is what content creators think about. They want to create their video, put it somewhere, and then get analytics back on how people engage with it. So now this is where we pick it up and go, okay, so analytics, what's important? Well, yes, to your question, understanding how many devices people consume it on could be important. For example, if you upload a video and you know that a lot of people are watching it on mobile, that'll be important for you to consider creating an iOS or an Android app so that people can continue to consume your content there. That's really key. And if you don't do that, do you think your consumption is going to go up, stay the same, or go down? Well, depends on your viewers. It probably will go down if you're not there where they want you to be. You have to be where your viewers are. So yes, content performance analytics, which is what we refer this to, is how many times did people show up? How many times did they click play? What devices did they watch on? And where in the world are they watching? And all of that's important. Agreed. But things go two steps forward. And before I jump to the second step, I'll jump to the first, obviously, that makes sense. So the next step is engagement. How are people watching your content? We have a great example. I would say more than 10 years ago, the Miami Dolphins were a Brightcove customer. And they spent like several hundred thousand dollars filming this really cool intro opener for their videos that they used for all of their fan engagement videos. And the problem is that they didn't realize that it was 30 seconds that was put in front of every single video they had. What happened to their viewership? Well, people stopped watching video, and they couldn't figure out why, because that intro video was super cool. And the truth is when you look at engagement analytics, you're going to see that in the first 30 seconds, you've lost half your audience. Uh-oh, something's wrong. Go back, figure it out. Oh, turns out that all they had to do was cut that 30-second intro down to 5 seconds, and they retained their audience. So engagement looked more flat rather than just a cliff. And that's part of the second step. Kind of not, sorry, the first step kind of in engagement analytics. The second step is now to understand cohorts and understand groups of users, because then you can market to them, right? Many of us daily are getting emails in our inbox from all the different services that we subscribe to, right? And these services are recommending content. Well, those content recommendations rely on understanding cohorts or groups of users, and then the content that they're consuming, and then how can you elongate their value? So a consumer's lifetime value is how long they will stay with your service, assuming they're paying you $5 a month, $10 a month. Their lifetime value grows the more and the longer they're engaged with you. So if you can recommend more and more content to them, that's great. You're going to keep them longer. You're going to have a better ROI, and you're going to generate more revenue. And understanding your users and their consumption behaviors and cohorts and recommending more content, getting them to stick around and watch more content, that's what's going to be really important for the content creators. Because as a content creator, you have some ideas, which are great. That's why you're popular in the first place. You've filmed a couple episodes. Awesome. But the question of where to go next can almost be dictated by your audience and their engagement on certain portions of what you've done. Go back, review the analytics. Where are there spikes of engagement? Spikes of engagement could mean one of two things. First, you did a lousy job explaining something. Somebody had to rewind and watch it again to try to understand it. Oh boy, I'm talking too fast. I got to slow down. Right? That's one example. The second example is something was really interesting and compelling, which means my viewers want to see more of that. So grab onto that. Find out what it is that your viewers like and want and do more of it, because that's how you'll be a successful creator.
We've spoken on a lot of really interesting topics so far. We've covered obviously CDNs, OVPs, analytics, and Brightcove features. But for just general OVPs, what sort of tech is coming? What is up next? You know, we mentioned H.265 earlier. And obviously, one of the big things that everyone's talking about right now is AI. So what's there?
So AI is a bit of a misnomer. If you think about it, AI is really just machine learning. And the machine can only learn what you teach it. It's not this whole like myth of, well, I'm going to create an AI and it's going to scour the internet and find everything that it needs. It's too much data and it's too complicated and too expensive to import all of it. I just spent a week at a hackathon, you know, regarding surrounding AI and what can be done around AI and video. And the truth is that there's different ways to look at it. There's generative AI. That means that you generate a video or audio or text using artificial intelligence. That's cool. That's interesting. It's in its early days, and that's going to get there. Some content creators will grab a hold of it with both hands and hang on for dear life because it's a great roller coaster ride. Others will shy away from it because they are the content creators. They don't want anybody else creating the content. It's their job. Totally cool, too. In the online video space, AI needs to be there to do something that's absolutely critical, and that is to complete the loop. I spoke earlier about the notion of context-aware encoding. That's the two technical Emmys here. So the idea is that Brightcove won this award, not only because we can compress content intelligently to save you on storage and bandwidth, but there's a completion of the loop. We have machine learning that watches your user's engagement of the content. Meaning, we look at the quality of service. If a user watches a video straight through, no buffering, no stuttering, no pausing, that's great. Are they watching on the right screen size? Are they watching a 720p version on a 1080 screen? Because upscaling isn't always great. That's the blockiness. Those video files hate it. Or is the reverse happening? Are we feeding a 1080 version into a smaller screen? And we use machine learning to complete the loop by watching what that is and making constant modifications to the context-aware encoding, to the encoding parameters, so that over time you can come up with the absolute perfect video profile that fits your viewers. And your viewers are going to be different than my viewers. They're going to be different than, you know, somebody else's viewers. So it's really important to understand what your viewership or where your viewership is, what they are, where they are, what kind of devices, what kind of pipes, right? African countries are all cellular-based technology delivery, right? But believe it or not, the quality of the cellular infrastructure is actually quite reasonable. Some of them have better throughput than I have here at home. But now you need to understand, okay, that means that we deliver high bitrate content to smaller screens, as opposed to somewhere in Japan, where you have incredible pipes, but you also have incredibly huge screens. And that's a completely different variant. And then you look at America, where at least in North America, we have a variety of screens, every single thing possible you can imagine. And you need to deliver the best possible quality to all of that. So completing that loop, understanding end to end what your users are experiencing, that's, believe it or not, the now for OVPs. And if they're not there now, they're missing the boat. And the future, nobody knows what the future holds, right? There's a bunch of guys that you know, some of which are sitting over this shoulder right here, right? There's a bunch of head mount display options that are going, this is the future. But if you look at one of these, that one in particular, right? That's a Samsung one. That's like 10 years old. We were talking about that 10 years ago. Where'd it go? Oh, it's finally here? No, it's not. A $3,500 head mounted, face mounted display. Granted, very cool, but not an everyday item. And yet these people like ourselves, like the online video platforms, we have to think about how to deliver video to that as well as my fridge. And now this is where, again, the future of online video platforms, nobody knows where it's going to go, but you need the service. You need the functionality because you as a content creator don't want to have to think about that. Right. Unless there's something really creative you're going to do within the 360 environment, which is cool, by the way. You know, I got a bunch of 360 cameras and you pair that with what's behind this box, which is a drone, and you put that all together and then you bring in augmented reality instead of just VR. And like you go off on so many tangents, which is awesome. But is that a standard of technology that you need to think about? No, you care about creating the content and getting your user to engage. That's what's most important to you. Why do you need to think about what happens in the middle? And that's what OVPs are for.
Well said. I have a lot of just personal questions I would love to talk to you about, which is related to cameras and content creation in general, just because I think we'd have a lot of fun there.
It also wouldn't be a technical episode or a tech episode in 2023 if we didn't ask about the AI question. So we had to get that one out of the way as well.
It's an important one. It is.
Okay, Carl. So how has the partnership between Brightcove and Accedo been an asset for serving the tier one market?
Absolutely. It's an interesting question because you phrased it so specifically with the tier one market. That's so self-serving of you, but it's awesome. The partnership between Brightcove and Accedo not only is fantastic at the tier one market, but at the tier two market as well. Granted, tier one means that it's the biggest dollars and, you know, the best logos and things like that. And that's awesome. That's a key critical thing because some of Brightcove customers I mentioned earlier are really into building their own Lego set with different pieces. And that's where Accedo can really hop in and really help out. They partner with Brightcove to deliver the content to the devices that maybe that particular company doesn't feel comfortable or doesn't have an internal team to develop for. You know, there are organizations that are really great with iOS and Android, but anything other than those two, they don't want to touch it. They don't have a development team of 20 or 30 people. And that's where Accedo can step up and step in and augment that company's kind of tech stack. That's where the partnership really helps because that main company will be using Brightcove for their core video platform or their online video platform. And Accedo already knows Brightcove. So all of that just flows smoothly. But that tier two market is really important as well, because that's where you get scale. We touched a little bit on this whole content creator economy. We see as an online video platform that the future of online video for content creators is moving in a direct-to-consumer model. And Accedo serves that too. And that's really key, really, really important, at least for Brightcove, that Accedo continue to serve the tier two market as well and offer a leg up to most content creators that decide to splinter from YouTube, where there are restrictions on the amount of revenue or the type of content that they could deliver, and then go off and do their own thing and really reach and resonate with their audience. And Accedo is a big part of that. And Brightcove wants to be as well, you know, reaching the tier two market and again, direct to consumer opportunities.
You said 16 years you've been with Brightcove, right, Carl? 18, yes, sir. Sorry, my bad.
No, 16. 16 with Brightcove. 16 with Brightcove.
Yeah. Okay. You're ready to get your driver's license, I guess.
Almost. The company is 18 years old, so it drives me around.
Yeah. Do you remember when the partnership first started with Accedo?
You know, in my case, I think we're talking a little over 10 years ago. In fact, probably closer to 12 years ago, where my first interaction was with Digiflare, not Accedo, but that's okay because Accedo bought Digiflare.
Just one more question here. A little bit of a surprise. I didn't tell you about this one. One thing that you might not know about me is that I am also a bison farmer. I understand you have a little bit of a farming operation yourself. What skills correlate to both farming and OVPs?
There are many skills, I'm certain. I can't name a single one other than live video streaming. So the inside joke is I do have quite a bit of farm animals on my property here. Not too many. But you know, I've got some chickens and some rabbits and some ducks and some turkeys and, you know, a couple others here and there. And, we have a raccoon problem. They come and eat our chickens and things like that. So we have, I've set up several, live streaming cameras that'll stream into the house so that I can be alerted if something comes onto my property. That's the connection between, you know, video technology and farming. That's what I've got.
Wow, he made it work. That's incredible. Yeah.
I've definitely used the drone before to check out the herd. You know, you just got to make sure that they're doing all right. You can't spot them from where you're standing.
You just bring the drone up and you can just scout around.
This was just a great conversation, Carl. Thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate it. It was my first time meeting you, so it's been an absolute pleasure. I know you and Neil have already had some back and forth. Carl, I'm really looking forward to actually having you in our office or for us going to your office, seeing you in person. Nonetheless, I think this was a great first opportunity to meet you. So again, thank you so much. Before I let you run off or sign off, is there anything else you would like to say to our audience or, you know, maybe looking into the crystal ball of what we're going to talk about next time? Anything else that you'd like to add?
No, just I just want to say thank you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for being a fantastic partner. And you have many members of your team that'll whisper my name and go, "Oh, Carl again." But I really do love Accedo and the partnership. And I think that it's really important for people to understand kind of, okay, if I don't know what an online video platform is, do I need it? And have a conversation. One thing that we at Brightcove are really, really adamant about is just open doors and open forms of communication. We don't have sales guys that'll just jump on top of you and try to sell, sell, sell. It's just a casual conversation. So what's really great is we want to be your trusted advisor, and having a conversation, even if it's something like this or something very, you know, low key, just hanging out at a bar, drinking a couple of beers, we're totally down for any kind of communication. Just reach out. My email address is crutman@brightcove.com, and everybody knows that. Most people even have my cell phone number. It's okay. Give me a call, give me a shout, or anyone else at the company. We're all very friendly and we're all open to conversation. And, you know, this is all about getting you what you need and helping people understand what they may need or what they may want and where they may want to go and where the next conversations could be all about this stuff, right? The 360 cameras or augmented reality or, you know, any of the stuff that's on the shelf. You never know what the future holds because the future is so bright and there's so much of it ahead of us that it's tough to say what we'll talk about next.
What a better person than yourself to be able to get that perspective. So it's greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
Okay, that wraps up episode number 4 of the Ixedo Playback Podcast. Thank you again so much for Carl for joining today's episode. For more information on Brightcove, you can check the details section of this episode. Thank you so much for joining and have a great rest of your week.